The Anti-Poverty Centre had a press conference outlining your disillusionment with the budget. Do you want to give my listeners some of an understanding of the key issues for the Anti-Poverty Centre?
I think the big issue that everyone except the government seems to be pretty aware of is that people can't afford to live. And however they wanted to try and dress it up, I think it's pretty clear to anyone who looks even in passing at it that there is absolutely nothing there that will meaningfully enable people on the very lowest incomes to get by more easily. People would have seen that there was a $300 energy company subsidy that will be paid directly to electricity providers. And there were other very minor tweaks that will see a handful of people receive a slightly higher job seeker payment and other tinkering around the edges that is really quite devastating for people who have been hoping that in the third budget, the government would finally grow a backbone and do something to genuinely help people.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? They've fallen back on this idea of giving bonuses, like $300 bonus, rather than looking at the systemic issues.
Yes, and that payment in particular is one that we have been very clear about its flaws. In the previous version of this payment, it was $500 and it was primarily targeted to welfare recipients. We saw people receiving payment increase letters from their electricity provider very shortly after that came into effect that happened to add up to around the value of the $500 payment. Many people were unable to access it at all or had processes that they needed to follow to access it and weren't aware that they needed to do that and so didn't access it. Some of those problems are resolved by the fact that it is being given to literally everyone, but the underlying problem of electricity providers just being able to increase their rates shows that this is a pointless measure, really, and that in the long term, those rate increases are going to be locked in while this $300 dries up very quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's exactly the same as the Commonwealth Rental Assistance. It seems to really just be corporate welfare, really, or it's $16.4 billion a year going straight into landlords' pockets, really, isn't it?
That's right. And so that figure is actually one that the government doesn't include in any of its material. What we've done to work that out is look at the number of people who receive Commonwealth Rent Assistance. And the Department of Social Services actually publishes the average rent paid by those people. And so when we look at and extrapolate the average rent being paid for people who receive Commonwealth Rent Assistance, it's not the $5 billion figure that you'll see in budget papers and elsewhere. It is that extra $11 billion is money being paid out of those base welfare payments because the Commonwealth Rent Assistance is so inadequate and there's such a big shortfall between what people receive and the rent that they pay. But again, Commonwealth Rent Assistance has got a plethora of problems. One being that, again, many people who pay rent can't get it, and many people who have housing costs but are not renters also don't get it. And of course, people who can't afford anywhere to live and don't have shelter at all also don't get it. So it's a very tiny amount of money. We're talking about $6 a week for people who live in a share house if they receive the maximum rate. And we're talking about $9 a week for people who live alone. In my case, not long before the budget, I copped a $20 a week increase. And I know that that's a pretty modest one compared to many that I've been hearing about. But last year, I ended up paying an increase of $100. So I'm $120 up in rent and maybe about $25 up in the amount of Commonwealth rent assistance that I receive. And again, that's a very common experience.
And so, what we're really seeing is a determined view from this government, and probably from the people that they actually represent, that welfare recipients cannot handle their own money.
That's correct. And it's, I think, not just a matter of paternalism, it's also a matter of punishment. They know that we don't have enough to live on, and they know that no matter how they slice and dice these supplements, that that will be true, and they don't care. So the Treasurer was asked a very good question last week. He was asked, well, you say that, when unemployment is high and economic conditions are bad, you can't raise JobSeeker or any Centrelink payment because you can't afford it. And now you, when you have low unemployment and you say the economy is good, you say you can't raise JobSeeker because it would be irresponsible and you need to have a surplus. So when is the right time to give people enough money to live on who rely on income support? And of course, the government continues to refuse to acknowledge that it wants there to be unemployment, and they are currently seeking to increase unemployment. And for as long as that's true, I mean, there's no scenario in which it's acceptable to leave people in poverty, but it's particularly perverse when this is part of their plan.
Let's go to the poverty line. And it was worked out by the Henderson report. The Henderson poverty line for a single person with no children is currently $597 per week. Now, JobSeeker payment is currently $381 per week for a single person with no children. I mean, we're just talking about a single person without children or responsibilities.
That's exactly right. And the Henderson poverty line itself is an inadequate measure. And we specifically use that measure because it's the least bad that we have. But we've also been calling on government for years now to work with low-income people to develop a sophisticated measure of poverty, because the housing figure in that, for example, is around $250 a week, which these days is pretty rare, a pretty rare sign. Yes, even in a share house, you know, you're not necessarily going to be able to get rent that low. And so there's a lot of work to be done to understand poverty, but we say an urgent increase to at least that level as a triage measure when people are experiencing such catastrophic circumstances. But again, their failure to do that over time has made things more urgent and has made that poverty line less adequate. And you know, it's one of the reasons that we say this entire situation needs to be completely depoliticized. The politicians themselves have an independent body that sets their wages and their increases. We have the Fair Work Commission that is tasked with ensuring that workers are receiving pay increases year on year, particularly award rate increases. Why are we leaving the ability for welfare recipients to survive in the hands of people who politicise our lives and use us as footballs, as punching bags, to, you know, I guess, turn the broader public against us and justify cruelty?
Well, you know, the Henderson report's really interesting because it was a fabulously important affair, but it's from the 1970s. And the reason for why it was so important was because it actually clarified that these issues could be quantified, but it was never supposed to be the end, and many things have changed.
That's correct. And I mean, not only was the work not supposed to stop, but also payments were supposed to increase, and they never actually did reach the level that would ensure no one was living in poverty. I mean, Bob Hawke promised that there would be no child in poverty, and we are certainly very, very far from that. Things are certainly much worse than the 90s when I grew up with my mum on Centrelink payments. You know, we have gotten further away, but it seems that the public is no longer comfortable with this. There was a long period where people really bought into the dole bludger myth, but I think over the last few years, both the increasing inadequacy of payments and the Morrison government demonstration that governments can do things and governments can stop being people from being poor have really shown that this is absurd. There's no evidence that says it's good for individuals or the community to have people in poverty. So why are we doing it? And they have no answer to that question.
That's interesting that you brought up the Fair Work Commission, and also there are other things like the national wage, setting of a national wage for the lowest paid workers. Your figures show that one in five people are working. They are so well, so poorly paid that they had to get social welfare.
That's correct. And you can't earn a lot of money before you lose access to your JobSeeker payment. So by the time you hit that poverty line, you're not eligible for JobSeeker anymore. So people are being paid such a low amount of money, whether that's because of incredibly low wages and the problems with things like junior rates, or whether that's because they have very few or infrequent hours. And that's a particular challenge for people with caring responsibilities or fluctuating disabilities that limit their ability to work, that it is not your fault that you have low paid work, but you are still not able to meet to get above the poverty line before you lose access to that income support. So, you know, it's kind of you're better off, but you are punished either way, I suppose, if you are one of those one in five.
Yeah. What it's really saying is that it, being below the poverty line in this country is related to being very low pay and insecure work as much as, say, disability or having other obligations.
That's right. And I mean, again, like people hopefully are quite aware that disabled people have experienced much higher rates of unemployment than the broader population, but so also do First Nations people, so do trans people, single mothers in particular, and of course, increasingly older people who move out of the workforce are unable to find a new job to move back in. But those harms, they do overlap. So for example, if you're a First Nations person who's disabled, those two things increase your likelihood of being incarcerated. And then those three things mean you're going to have a real battle to try and get any kind of employment, and particularly suitable employment that you're able to hold down. That's another big factor that people don't talk about when we say someone is unemployed, but there's a labour market shortage. It's, well, what are the jobs and what is the physical and other capacity of the person to do the job that's available. So yeah, as I said, it's just perverse.
Yeah, and politicising it is exactly what's going on, because, I mean, you've got certain demands, aren't you? And part of them might surprise some people. Some of them are make education free from tertiary to primary and freeze HECS indexation in the short term. Now, this might surprise people, but these are indicators of poverty mechanisms, aren't they, these sorts of things?
That's right. I mean, people who want to talk down to welfare recipients and have those paternalistic approaches talk an awful lot about intergenerational dependence on welfare. And when we think about things like the appallingly low rate of student Centrelink payments and the enormous risk that you take when you're taking on such a huge amount of debt to try and take on a university qualification, that you're really setting people up to fail. But when I tried to do a degree, it was quite a long time ago now, and youth allowance is even less adequate these days, but I couldn't live on youth allowance and I couldn't maintain employment and study at the same time. So the upshot is that I don't have a degree, and it wasn't feasible for me. It's something that I was interested in and wanted to pursue, but poverty stopped that from happening. And that is going to be happening more and more. I mean, 20 years ago, the cost of degrees was nothing like what it is now. And of course, when you take on those HECS debts, whether or not you complete your degree, you have that debt. That debt limits your capacity to buy a home and to borrow money for a mortgage if you do end up with a good job, whether or not it's related to your degree, which means you're more likely to be trapped in the rental market, paying a huge amount of your income, and over the long term in your life, be far less financially secure than someone who has had, you know, been able to do the thing where you pay your HECS up front and you get a discount on your student fees and all those sorts of things. Be able to live at home comfortably without having to take on shitty paid jobs and things like this.
So they're reinforcing the social barriers for progressing a person's life.
Absolutely, and far more so than ever existed when the Prime Minister was coming through. I believe he had access to a scholarship in high school, went to university for free. Obviously, when he lived with his mum on what was called an invalid payment at the time, the equivalent of a disability support pension now, she was in high quality new public housing with an adequate payment. So his life circumstances enabled him to get where he is because of the social supports that were in place. And those social supports are now threadbare. And for many people, that means homelessness, it means hospitalisation. And, you know, it's confronting, but we always think it is very important to remind people that the welfare system, as it currently is designed, kills people. It kills people in a number of ways, both through slow death, the conditions that people are living in leading to early death or putting them in risky situations. But also, you know, it's really disturbing to see the correlation between suicide rates and people who rely on Centrelink payments to live.
What do you say about this supposed surplus?
I mean, for one thing, these numbers are made up.
Yeah,
it's really absurd that so much of our lives are dictated by things like budget surpluses and deficits and CPI and all these things. And they're nonsense. You know, the government never gets its forecasts right. It'll either come out with more or less of a surplus than it predicted. These are just predictions. But, you know, as many people, and it's great to see more people saying this, budgets are about choices. They could make a choice to support people, even if they wanted to insist on the choices they have made, like handing out lots of tax cuts, like continuing with negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts and investing hundreds of billions of dollars of public money in submarines that will probably never materialize. Even if they would insist on doing all of that, they could still afford to ensure that welfare recipients are not living in poverty. And there are good reasons to go into deficit, and that's one of them.